Blog Talk Radio.
Give me the Flats of Dawn with plenty of tailing fish
and the perfect fly rod.
Yeah!
And get ready for some magic.
What an awesome eat!
I got one!
Oh, damn, I got him! You got it! I got him!
Join Bonefish and Tarpon Trust.
Nice fish.
And help make sure that the magic never ends. Visit tarbone.org to find out how you can help.
With that beer pour, you know that it is time for another edition of Kayak Fishing Radio. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Charles Levi, also known as Redfish Chuck. My illustrious co-host, Captain Alex Gritch, who will be joining us shortly. We are, however, joined right now live from Hot Atlanta. Is it hot? That's the question. James Page. James Page. James, are you there?
Northside represent.
It took a minute.
I was on mute.
I figured as much. How are you, sir?
It's good, but it is hot and hot. Later. I can tell you that for sure.
It's hot?
Yes. It's July.
Yeah, well, we had a heat index today of 105. So there's that.
Yeah. There were some places in middle Georgia that had a heat index in 100, you know, 100, 101. You know, because middle Georgia gets hot. It's kind of like Ocala. You know, the middle of the state gets so hot in Florida. Middle of Georgia gets really hot, especially down through Valdosta, making Valdosta over towards the swamp, the Kentucky swamp. All those pine forests, and there's, you know, there's no breeze. It's not good.
Stagnant, hot, nasty July air.
Yep. I think Ocala is the worst. So I think Ocala is the hottest spot in the world.
Yeah, it truly is. It sucks up there. I don't know why anybody would want to live there, but unless you've got a bunch of horses and you breed horses or something, maybe. I don't know what the deal is with that either. But anyway, so obviously it's not Tuesday night. It's a Wednesday night, and we kind of bounced the night around this week. Captain Alex had some stuff going on yesterday as well as I did, or I guess I should say I did as well. And but here we are. It's a Wednesday, and you know, I'm gonna jump into something real quick before Alex gives us a call. We talk about the mullet run. I think I've come to a realization.
What would that be?
That I'm I'm not really a big fan at the moment of the kayak fishing world.
And why is that, Chuck?
Has nothing, honestly, God, it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that I'm in the middle of building, in my opinion, the baddest technical micro skiff ever to see water. But it has everything to do with the fact that, you know, ICAST was just last week, and the amount of negativity that I read and I saw and the blatant disrespect for manufacturers that I saw from the show is the exact reason why I feel like ICAST itself has to do a better job at vetting people and allowing people to film only if film and post only if they are media credentialed, which used to be the thing. Back in the day at ICAST, if you were on the floor and they saw you with a camera or video camera and you weren't media credentialed, they'd throw you out. Because they don't. The idea is for the media people, magazines, TV, whatever, to be able to share with the world, you know, the new things, so to speak. And it's not even really that, because all the stuff gets leaked prior to. But now what it's become now is everybody with an Instagram account that's got a few thousand followers ends up getting into the show because they've got some sort of connection. And then they feel like their opinion is so important that they have to share it with the world. And this particular ICAST was the absolute worst that I had ever seen in people going above and beyond what they should do and literally disrespecting manufacturers' products at the show. At the show.
Would you not consider that the most pathetic thing you've ever seen?
It is. It truly is. And here's the thing. I'll give you an example. I'm not going to mention the guy's name because I don't have to. Those of you that saw the video, you guys will probably know exactly who I'm talking about. And I'm not, you know, like I said, I'm not throwing anybody's name out underneath the bus. But listen, when you're wearing a manufacturer's polo shirt and you're standing in the booth of a competitor's product and you're virtually disrespecting the product while you're standing in the booth videotaping yourself to the world talking about how, you know, this looks cheap and that's cheap and it's not as good quality, blah, 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 whatever the case. A, and this is just my opinion, right? So people, if you have a problem with my opinion, I'm sorry. I mean, it's just that's why I do a podcast, is so I can voice my opinion. But it's my opinion that when you show up to a place like ICAST, or any boat show or trade show for that matter, and you're wearing a specific manufacturer's polo shirt, the last thing you should do is disrespect another manufacturer's product, because it doesn't only look bad on you, but it also looks horrible on the manufacturer in which you're representing. That to me is common sense. If you don't like a product, I get it. You want to share your thoughts and opinions with the world because for some reason your thoughts and opinions on a specific boat matter, then do so.
Or you perceive that anyone cares.
Right. But do so.
Right.
But do it in such a way to where you're not disrespecting the brand that you're trying to represent. And you're not disrespecting the company, per se, that made the product. First problem I have with the whole entire situation, if you've never sat in any of these manufacturers' kayaks or skiffs or boats or whatever, then your opinion is invalid because you don't know what the boat's capable of doing. You don't know what the kayak is capable of. You don't have the first clue besides looking at something. And let me tell you this, if you're not an engineer and you don't design things for a living, I'm sorry, but your opinion doesn't hold any weight. Two things, right? You've never been in it, and you're not an engineer. Because just because you sell a product, or just because you fish from a product, or just because you like a product, or just because you're a part of a group or a scene, the kayak fishing industry, whatever you want to call it, doesn't mean you're an expert. It means that you fish from a plastic boat. Unless you've had your hands involved in manufacturing before, or unless you're an engineer, because it doesn't matter if you're an aerospace engineer or if you're a It doesn't make a difference. If any kind of engineer can, right, any kind of an engineer, they all have the same mind, right? All engineers I've ever met in my entire life all have the same mind. And they can look at just about anything and come up with something that they might would do a little different. But at least they would have something to follow that up with, an explanation or whatever, or maybe an idea or a pitch or whatever, to show that part of whatever it is. You know what I mean? You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
It's aggravating. And it's aggravating to see people literally bicker and argue over nothing. There is no form of fishing, sport, hobby, anything that I've ever seen, like the kayak fishing industry, where there are so many grown men that act like babies, that act like school kids arguing outside because somebody stole someone's lunch money. Like, it's literally the most ridiculous thing I think I've ever seen in my entire life. And it's getting worse. There's a reason why a lot of the guys that were around when I first started are gone. Now they're boat fishing. Now they're doing something completely different. They don't. I'm a freaking circus. It's become a literal circus. Everybody wants to be somebody. Everybody, again, feels like their opinion, their vision, their whatever matters. My opinion doesn't make a difference. What I think is cool and what I think is dumb doesn't make a difference. It's not gonna sell more kayaks or less kayaks. I understand that. And I've been doing a radio show for 9 years about kayak fishing. I've been doing a radio show longer than I would say 90% of the problem children in kayak fishing have even been fishing, let alone kayak fishing. I'm not trying to blow my head up. I'm just being like super real right now. It's kayak fishing. It's kayak fishing. It's plastic boats. I just don't understand the pack mentality and the mindset. Like, I'll throw this out there. There's still people out there that hate on Luther because of Bonafide. There's still people out there that say that whatever Luther put out with Bonafide is not legit. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. How many of you people talking smack own at least one thing Yak Attack? Right? There's a guy that has literally change the way that people put accessories on their boats, on their kayaks. Hell, even on their boats. Let me tell you, I'm seriously considering putting a track system on either side of my gunwales of the Rightwater 12 so that I can put a camera mount on the boat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I mean, I could use somebody else's product. I'm sure I could find somebody else that makes a mount that I can use on the boat. But Luther's American made. Luther's always been American made. Luther employs a bunch of Americans. He's a good person. He's a pillar of the sport. And even though I'm playing around in the microskiff world, still want to support those people who I've made lifelong friendships with from within the industry. You know, you get a lot further, too, by the way, for those of you that think you're going to become something one day in kayak fishing that run your mouth 24/7. You get a lot further in this industry if you make friends with people. And if you make friends with people across the gamut, it doesn't make a difference who they represent. It doesn't make a difference who they fish for. It doesn't make a difference what manufacturer they own or which one they run or whose production manager they are or whatever, whatever, whatever. It's fishing and it's kayak fishing. Be friendly to everybody because you're supposed to be just in nature. You're just supposed to be a good person naturally, right? Like, we're not supposed to be a bunch of jerks running around, running our mouths 24/7, being internet keyboard cowboys trying to, you know, make yourself look cool by talking trash about a manufacturer. like at the end of the day, just take, if you take anything at all from my little rant, take this. Understand that you catch more bees with honey than you do with vinegar. Super simple concept. You treat everybody nice. You play fair. You don't act like a jerk. And people will start to want to kind of watch and see what you're doing and follow along with you and maybe be interested in your YouTube channel that has 120 subscribers. I'm just saying, like, there's a better way to do things.
Cujo.
And,
down, Cujo.
Yeah. Killer, kill. Dogs are acting crazy. Anyways. But anyhow, there's a disconnect between the community aspect of kayak fishing now than the way that it used to be. When Chip Gibson, the godfather of kayak fishing radio, when he decided to do kayak fishing radio, he did it kind of more or less just for a reason to kind of get a couple of people that like to talk about kayak fishing together and chit-chat, the round table. It was literally just an open discussion. You can discuss anything you wanted to. Nobody cared if you fished from a Hobie. Nobody cared if you fished from a native. Nobody cared if you fished from an emotion or any of them. Didn't matter, any of them. Doesn't make a difference because nobody cared, you see? Because nobody was trying to accomplish anything. No one was trying to make a name for themselves. It was just, and we all kind of understood that we fish in silly little plastic boats. Like, you can't pretend that you're super, super cool if you're still fishing in a silly little plastic boat. Like, it's a plastic boat. Don't take yourself that seriously. You know what I mean? I'm not knocking people that have fallen in love with kayak fishing and that this is their thing, and they're going to kayak fish until they can't paddle or pedal or anything anymore. I'm not knocking anybody for any of those types of things. So that's just not my nature. I don't do that. I love to kayak fish. I will probably always want to at some point get into one and paddle it around and fish. But it's just out of hand. It's just, honest to goodness, it's completely out of hand. And I think a lot of it honestly falls back on some of the manufacturers, because some of the manufacturers have put people in place in pro staffs and team fishing teams and all this kind of thing, and there's no checks and balances. It's just, here's your discount, or here's your free boat, or here's your this, here's your that, and go out there and produce pictures. And as long as you're producing pictures, and as long as your local kayak shop is happy, then you're good with us, right? But no one's going around checking these men and women's Facebook pages and their Instagram accounts and watching their live feeds and watching and listening to what they're saying and understand that, wait a minute, this guy is a true representative of our brand. If I see you wearing a specific brand shirt and you're running your mouth about another manufacturer while you're wearing that shirt or hat or with your kayak in the background, or even if I just know that you fish for somebody else and you're running your mouth, I'm going to call you on it. I'll call you on it. That's my warning. From here on through, I promise you, if I see somebody on social media, especially in my newsfeed, cracking jokes or talking ill will about another manufacturer's product while you, I know for a fact that you represent somebody, I'll dime you out, because you're ruining the sport. You're ruining the sport for the people that want to get into the sport, because they follow people on social media and they see all this nonsense. And then they decide to themselves, wait, whoa. This is high school? Right? Like, what are we doing? This is serious? Like, we're really going to, with the bickering? We're really going to, with the videos and the trash talk and all this kind of thing? it's no secret. There's specific, there's certain manufacturer fanboys that aren't maybe even on the team that if it's not that brand, then the rest of it's garbage. We've all seen it a million times, which I think is the most asinine thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Let me tell you guys something real quick. So in the time that I fished, that I considered myself like a hardcore kayak angler, I was blessed to be able to work with a couple of different manufacturers, mainly Jackson and Hobie, right? And while I was with those two manufacturers, I gave those manufacturers 110% that I could with the time that, because of my home situation with my kids and everything else, I didn't really have a whole lot of time to do sometimes. But the one thing that I never did was I never bashed anybody else's product. We're joined by Captain Alex Gorichki.
All right, all right, all right.
I'm just going on a real brief rant, as sometimes I like to do, and this one is specific to the kayak fishing community and the nonsense that I saw that took place at ICAST and after ICAST and since ICAST, and just the garbage that has popped up within the sport. I know, I'm sorry that I do this from time to time, but I feel like it needs to be addressed. And, you know, it's something that I think a lot of folks need to think about, that, you know, you don't just represent yourself when you represent a manufacturer. You represent that manufacturer just as much as a sales rep. So I'll leave it at that. I won't drag it off anymore. Hope you don't mind my rant. Off my
soapbox. If you
want to
talk smack about the fish you catch, not what you fish out of. And if you can't talk smack about the fish you catch, then keep your mouth shut.
Boom. Words of wisdom.
I just dropped the mic. I dropped the mic after I did that.
That'd be a good sound bite to have, just a thud.
You know how many times we could have used that over the years, man? Yeah, and the thing about it, real quick, the thing about it is this. Look, I'm not trying to ruffle anybody's feathers. I'm just being honest. Right. Again, some of us have been around this sport for a pretty damn long time, and what we have seen transpire in the last, I would say, truly 4 years has been nothing short of asinine. And I get it. I trust me when I tell you, I do get it. That there's people that, I mean, your life ambition is to try and become like the next Robert Field or Jameson Redding or Drew Gregory or Chad Hoover or whoever. I get it. The reality is, if you're running around talking smack about any manufacturer, it could be a plastic company. It could be a fly rod company. It could be a spinning reel company. You're running around running your mouth about any of that stuff. It's never going to happen for you because you don't have the disposition to be that person. There's ways of voicing your opinions about a specific product, maybe where you can offer up something better than it sucks. Why does it suck? Because the name on the side of the boat is Pelican. Like, are you serious? Like, that's how you gauge how something sucks because it says Pelican on the side of it? I bet you right after ICAST, or as soon as that boat was shown to the world, I bet you that there were 1,000 or more anglers that were stoked that they'd be able to get, even if it is an old generation, a Hobie-style pedal drive in a kayak for $1,400. Right? Because not everybody's got $3,000 laying around to go drop on a boat. So, you know, why don't you just back up, relax, take a deep breath, let the boat come out, let people actually pedal it, find out what they think about it, see if they don't fall apart or if they don't sink or whatever, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, give it an opportunity to either float or sink, fail or rise above what everybody thought. You know, that's the difference. I've never understood that. Just like in voting, like in ICAST voting cracks me up too. It's like, how can you vote on the best fly rod if you'd never thrown it? All right? Like, how can you vote on the best inshore saltwater rod if you've never fished it? Like, you know what I mean? Those types of things that just, I don't put a whole lot of faith into a lot of that stuff. And unfortunately, in the age of social media, we tend to do just that. We put a lot of faith into written word from some guy who, I mean, listen, I saw a dude do a video on the Pelican boat. Now, here's where I'll call shenanigans. You cannot sit there and tell me that that first generation drive is going to be as efficient and as smooth as the newest one from Hobie. I'm not talking trash about Pelican because, listen, everybody knows it's a first-generation style of the drive system. They're not claiming that it's got reverse and that it's as efficient as the new drive system. No one ever said that. But I watched the guy at
– they can't. The original patent for the original very first gen of the Mirage drive is what went out. They've subsequently patented upgrade since. So it'll be 20 years before anybody can mess with even where their technology is at today.
So right.
That's the way that works.
And yeah, and the thing is, it's like we all knew it was going to happen eventually. Everybody that follows kayaking or has followed kayaking for any length of time knew that at some point, somebody was going to find a way to produce something that had flippers that was similar to the Hobie drive. And it is what it is. Hobie knew it. It's not like Hobie was surprised. It's not like they ripped off Hobie. Once your patent's expired, then it's up for grabs. That's the way the world works. I mean, Thomas Edison held a patent on a light bulb, I'm sure. How many light bulb manufacturers are there now? It's literally not different. There's nothing different between those two scenarios. They're both products. They both have a very specific function. Light bulbs turn on and illuminate areas. Little flipper things make a kayak move. Like that, they all do. They all have their own job, and it is what it is. But that's just the way the world works. And again, sorry, ranting. Get off the soapbox, Chuck. I know we're going to talk about mullet, not the haircut, but the fish. But just please, if you're listening to this and you just so happen to be one of those people likes to start trash and or feels like you have to go above and beyond to voice your opinion about certain things or whatever, then be prepared if somebody comes back to you and challenges you on your idea or on your statement or any of that stuff. I'll challenge you, but I'll be respectful about it. I won't even call you out by name like I didn't do earlier. So there's that. Mullet, Alex.
Yes.
Mullet.
They swim in the water. I've got about 4 dozen of them in a live well in the back of my house right now. What about them?
They're awesome.
Yeah, they catch fish.
They're here. Kind of.
Yeah.
Have you seen any off the beach besides the hog legs? Have you seen any smaller mullet off the beach?
No. We still got a few weeks to wait.
Yeah.
Middle to the end of August.
Yeah.
So
I saw quite a few in the river. The last two trips in the river I've taken, which were my first two trips in several months. I saw quite a few in the river.
It's weird. They're real shifty. Kind of here today, gone tomorrow situation.
Mm-hmm.
But some boat spots are holding real well. We had a weird, like, late spawn, too. We have a whole bunch of little pinky mullets when everything should be about 5 inches right now. there's some of those 5-inchers, but not a lot. And there's a ton of just pinkies, which were way late on the pinky mullet season. That's usually a month or two ago, they were at pinky size, and now they're supposed to be 3 to 5, and they're not. I don't know. We had a late spawn or something funky. That's of the
maybe
silvers.
There's just not enough good algae for them to eat in worms.
Might be the case, because they clean algae off the grass and yada, yada, yada. So that might be the case. I'll tell you what, though. Get a bunch of them and keep them alive. They can catch a whole bunch of fish. No, I'm
See,
giving
that
a
Smith
seminar.
You got the other day were nice.
Yeah, that seminar I picked up at Voters Exchange is going to be on the mullet run. The up-and-coming mullet run.
And looking forward to it. You know, I like the mullet run for a number of different reasons, but mainly because, especially off the beaches, it can be absolute chaos. And the action can be – go ahead, I'm sorry.
I just said it's magic.
It really
absolute
is.
Magic.
I've never –
We got a little precursor of it on, I don't know, some day that I fished. They all kind of run together at this point. But we had a group of those hog legs that came around the corner at the jetty, just like they do in the mullet run. And every snook on that jetty decided that then, right now, was the time to eat, and they all went flying. It was if you've never seen that many fish, that much bait with active feeding fish in it, it's a sight to behold, that's for sure.
Yeah, and especially off the Cape, I mean, there's no shortage of different species that you're going to run into. I always go back to that couple of days that we fished the mullet run, and I mean, literally, we started off throwing plastics and hard baits and stuff, and you'd get your plastic chewed up by any number of toothy critters, and you'd have just a little tiny chunk left on a jig head, and then you're still catching fish. I mean, as fast as you can go. But if that fish got down below the wad of bait in other game fish, the sharks ate it. Like, the sharks were there waiting. Like, but it's super exciting to watch, you know, black tips and spinners come up into a wad of mullet and just wreck havoc and see the bluefish and jacks and everything else. So, you know, getting into the gear side of setting yourself up for the mullet run and being prepared for arguably the most exciting moment that you're probably ever going to find off of our coast in a kayak off the beach, being the mullet run. You know, what would your recommendations be as far as, you know, just kind of all around decent gear to take with you and set up and that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, you kind of got two scenarios you can play with the mullet run. One is you can fish more long lines for snook and just general, you know, jacks and bleeds and everything, redfish. And that's going to usually happen right in the surf zone. So it's a little tougher to do from the kayak until it calms down. And when it calms down, really actually great out of the kayak because you're a bit more mobile than even on foot on the beach. Anybody who's run up and down a beach chasing fish knows that it'll get to wear on you after a while, especially your knees. So in the kayak, you're a little more mobile, so you can chase schools of bait. Obviously, in the tighter inside breakers and troughs, and then also that transfers over into Port Canaveral, anywhere like that, you're going to look at somewhere like somewhere in between a 4,000 and maybe a 6,000 reel. Step it up to the 6,000 when you're class reel. Step it up to the 6,000 when you're around structure, be it the jetty or maybe down south towards South Patrick and a little bit further south where you might be in the rocky areas, just so you have the ability to move that fish a little better. And realistically, everything's eating a finger mullet. So you'll even have giant tarpon eating finger mullets. And like I said, that's kind of your right up in the surf zone. And I typically am going to be looking to use the actual finger mullet, not the larger hog leg, we say, or the blacks. Or you have the black mullet, striped mullet, which is one species, and then you have the silver mullet, which is a completely other species. Almost all of your small finger mullet in the mullet run are going to be silvers. You will also have bigger schools of big silver mullet that are in the maybe 8-10 inch range. Silver mullet don't get bigger than about a foot. The black mullet or the striped mullet, they can get several pounds, 24, 26 inches. They can get massive. Everybody's who's fished around here in the lagoons has seen the big giant black mullet jumping around, big lobbing, floppy jumps. Those guys right there, they tend to stay, just like the finger mullet do in a school of associated size, those ones tend to stay in those same schools of mullet their size. So what you'll have is you'll have just ribbons of finger mullet running down the beach. Everything's headed south, and that's what the mullet run means. It's an actual migration of the mullet species, both of them, on a southerly push. They're going south down the beach, and they continuously come from north to south. And typically that break line or just inside is where the finger mullet are going to be. And a lot of times you can actually net your bait right there on the beach before you launch your kayak. You'll also have the schools of large striped or black mullet or even the larger silver mullets. They'll typically run just outside the breakers to about 15 foot of water, maybe even a little deeper, 20 foot of water. Those right there you'll fish more traditionally like we do in the summertime with baits for tarpon, where you're going to slow troll that bait, large circle hook in its nose. You're using big mullet, a dozen of them. Those schools typically push down the beach continuously. Don't stop. They might slow a little bit, mill a little bit, but they're going to keep pushing south down the beach. And what you can do is follow that school of bait, trolling your baits in and around the school. And those baits will have the really big tarpon in them. They'll have the big sharks. You can also get the kingfish in there. So it's not a bad idea to have some stinger rigs ready. And if you're getting cut off, maybe throw a stinger rig on them there. That process of getting the bigger baits and then following probably the same school you cast into the baits out of for miles down the beach until you're done fishing that school or you figure there's no tarpon, there's nothing you really want in there, then you break off and you come back, head to the north, and there's going to be another wave, hopefully, of those larger baits. And you can slow troll your bait anywhere from about 10, just outside the breaker, so 7 to 10 foot of water, all the way out to about 35 foot of water and have opportunities all the way through. So the mullet run, real quick, just to kind of get to the basis of what it actually is, like I said, a migration of both mullet species down the southeastern coast. So when the mullet run happens, it happens due to the fact that it starts cooling down and fall starts hitting the southeast U.S. At the very least, fronts and cold fronts have started pushing across the southeast and summer's breaking, basically. So what that does is it triggers a migratory response, and all mullet, big and small, all the way up and down the eastern seaboard, and they push south for the winter so that they can get to more comfortable, warmer waters to be able to winter over. Because mullet, you know, they have a pretty good range of temperature, but they can still, if it gets too cold, they'll obviously die. So all the mullet from the Carolinas, from Georgia, from North Florida, all the backwaters of the everywhere up there, all that water, all those mullet flood out of the backwaters, flood out of the bays, flood out onto the coast and onto the beach, and then continuously slide south. It's very weather dependent. A lot of times tropical storms can mess it up, can kind of jumble the whole thing up. A lot of times the right storms can kick it off and get it going. Typically, like I said, sometime mid to last week of August, we'll see the first waves of bait pushing down. And it'll continuously progress, get more and more. And even though we're not having cold fronts here, as you come from August into September, above the Florida-Georgia line, really, as September, as August turns into September, you start getting those cold pushes. And even though we don't have cold fronts here, it still triggers that migration and that response in the mullet to continuously start pushing down. So it's something that you can, anywhere along the coast, take advantage of. Anywhere from roughly Stewart South is really awesome areas to fish when it's real thick as the mullet head down south, because the water cleans up a lot. It's a lot more visual than it is here typically, because up on the Space Coast, the water's typically a little bit dirtier. And you can, if it dries up here, say your mullet were crazy for 2 weeks here, and you go out and there's no mullet anywhere, and you have one more day to fish, you could actually drive south a couple hours or a little bit further and probably come across the same schools of mullet that were working their way down, plus more, and fish those fish as they move south. Typically, we'll get waves of bait, and it'll carry on all the way through September, sometimes into October. And if we're really lucky, even a little bit later than that. But these days seems to be the last week of August all the way through September are the prime weeks. So that's about 5 weeks that you get of really prime time to go out and try to get into that bite and check out the mullet run. For the big fish, obviously, you use tarpon gear. 8,000 spinners or conventionals in the 20-pound class, 20 to 30-pound class, live bait rod. There you go. You know, it's really fun to plug, too. Throw plugs from the beach.
I love that, man. It's so much fun.
We had those. There were some of those. There's always mullet kind of moving around doing their thing. They're mullet. That's what they do. And there's ocean run mullet that kind of bounce around from the tip of the Cape and here and there. And that's what had moved in when we fished those a few days ago. When they came around the corner, all of the snook lit up. I cast netted 200 pounds of them and kept four. Actually, we kept six. So out of 200 pounds, I actually kept six of the stupid baits. Almost killed myself because I couldn't get the net out of the water. But that school pushed its way into the port. And once it got off the jetty, there was really no fish in it. We took those mullet we cast netted out of the school, went right back to the jetty, and fed one of those foot-long mullet to a snook right there on the jetty. And it obviously been there when they passed through and went ham just with all the rest of them. He might not have gotten his food, or maybe he was a little glutton and he wanted to get another one. But that's kind of the way that worked out. And as we came out, we actually fished the beach kind of north along the Cape there. And there was not a bunch, but several more packs of those mullet kind of just milling around doing their thing. Nothing special, not moving anywhere, really. And we were actually throwing a big popper, a real big popper, on an 8,000 spinner. And it got smoked by, like, a handful of good sharks. It was pretty bad, dude. None of them hooked up, thankfully, because I don't know how we got a plug out of a shark's face. But because I don't think we would have wanted to give up a $30 popper to a shark. But it was seeing, six, seven-foot sharks just absolutely explode on top water is pretty much a sight to see for sure. And all the usual suspects that moved by as summer progressed and after we went through spring and pushed through summer, you know, your big tarpon, your cobia, your kingfish, all these fish use this as a last chance. The tarpon actually follow the mullet run out. They're gone. After the mullet runs over, you'll have a really hard time finding any concentrations of tarpon. You will get a slow pick here and there. You might jump a fish here and there. Some areas maybe where some bait is. if it doesn't get cold and the water temperatures don't drop, they'll hang out around the bait a little bit. But for the most part, those tarpon that have pushed, they basically push up to South Carolina, North Carolina, in the summer, follow that push, that migration of baits as they slide south. And it's your last chance of the year to put a tarpon in the air, off the beach typically. And it's one of the best chances of the year to do it too. It definitely might be an opportunity for us to make up a little bit for what the summer lacked in tarpon fishing, because it lacked.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm really kind of curious as to something. Why have you never written a book?
No. Buy my posters.
I'm serious, dude.
You know, I don't know. I probably could do a book. It would be an interesting situation. I just observe.
I mean,
observe.
Here's the thing. Alex, me and you have been fishing together for quite a number of years now, and there's very few people. James is included in this group. There's very few people who I fish with that I almost would just rather just listen to you talk about what you see and where we should go, why we should go there, and because you've got a different level of understanding of what these game fish are doing, when they're doing it, why they're doing it, than honestly, just about anybody who's ever written a book on any of the topics. Because I've read a lot of books and a lot of publications that were done by people that have been considered experts or whatever in their fields. And, dude, I don't know, man. You really should do that. You could self-publish it, too, on Amazon and be done with it. You don't have to, like, mess with publishers and stuff. You can just do it yourself. You should seriously consider that. Dude, you just don't find that. You don't find people with real life knowledge in the depth that you have it. And I get that. But it's like the way you deliver it and whatever, man. I'm not trying to toot your horn. I always do. I always give you mad props because I just, you know, you're one of the best at what you do that I know. And, but I think that there's a lot of people, man, that might jump on board, pick up a copy of your self-published. You should do self-published, like, small chapter books, like maybe 3 or 4 chapters long on a specific topic and do it on Amazon. Dude, I'm telling you, like, You can't buy that kind of knowledge unless it's in book form. And most of the time, from what I've read in a lot of fishing books, a lot of it's just crap to fill pages. But
well, yeah, I mean, a lot of what I know is from reading. But thankfully, I got to grow up with a constant subscription to Florida Sportsman back when it was about an inch and a half thick, and actually with tons of articles from really, really interesting people. I've just always been a sponge.
Those were the good days.
Yeah, I kind of miss those days of Florida Sportsman. Back when ads were few and far between and good content was easy to come by.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow.
It's been a while.
So back to the monitor in their jacuzzi for the last night of their lives. I'm going to go feed them to some snook tomorrow. We have some mud minnows, too. Some zebra stripe fat bellies and some bull minnows.
I heard there been some flounder around.
Mm-hmm. There has been some flounder around. Bunch of snappers.
Hmm.
Snook fishing, great. We got a nice 31 and a half inch fish today, just in flop. That was on artificial.
Really?
So, Yeah. Yeah, on one of them voodoo shrimps or something like that. Actually, I think it was the voodoo shrimp. Yeah, pretty trick. Nice big old stuff on that.
What about the pictures of the tarpon and the baby tarpon out of the kayaks?
Yeah, there's a lot of those right now. Oh, yeah. There's some good
and
fish,
those are
too.
Good. I was going to say, dude, you've been catching some studly baby tarpon. I mean, those are still obviously juveniles, but still, those are some good-sized tarpon for the river.
Yeah, if they're under 50 pounds, they're a juvenile. But, no, we jumped one, too, last week or the week before. I don't even remember now. Like I said, every day is running together. We jumped one that was every bit of 45. It might have gone 50 pounds. That thing's back was wide. It came out of the water like it was not happy that it had a hook in its mouth. And actually, we fought it for a good long time. It got deep. It actually rolled once while we were fighting it. You know when you're fighting a juvenile tarpon and it rolls. Like, it legit has gone down deep and comes up and takes a roll and goes back at it like a real tarpon does. You know you got a good one on. But it ended up getting behind the guy. And I think it realized that he was in a weakened position, kind of stretched out behind him. He didn't get his boat turned around quite quick enough to get that fish centered back up in front of him. Took a jump and on that tight line, and that was it. You know, it was a big fish, a very big fish. We ended up getting one that was probably about 35, a bunch of them in that 15-pound range, maybe 20-pound range, and a whole mess of little guys. You know, the little guys are kind of all over the place. But it's what I've done for a very long time, so it's hard to beat for summertime fun.
For sure.
That was the beauty of growing up there on Pine Island. I mean, that's just what we did all summer long with tarpon fish.
I wish that place had never been messed with. The ditch system would have never been messed with. I mean, it was just. It was crazy
but you know
back
what?
In the day.
This is where we actually did something good, and I don't think anybody really realizes it. But what they did, diverting that ditch and putting it into the lakes, as much as it weirded out the tarpon fishing, and the tarpon fishing is still great out. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. Yeah. No, out there it's great. Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, what I've seen when I was a kid out there, when that water flowed straight down that ditch, the whole ditch, all of the ditch. Now where you see maybe one or two little tarpon rolls, if you go up and down the ditch, that used to be packs of 15, 20, 30 fish just cruising up and down different sections of ditches. That diversion of the ditch into the lakes and then subsequently letting it trickle back out into the lagoon is actually how it should be. And it was intended to clean that water coming out of that ditch, which was full of bad agriculture waste. You know, and it did what it was intended to do, and it does it to this day. And arguably, if everything else wasn't going sideways with the lagoon, you know, that whole area of the flats behind there, and arguably it is. It's pretty still holding on pretty good, or at least trying to.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, to me, it had pros and cons. The new adjustment that they made, putting the water into the lakes, but. You know, obviously, looking at the bigger picture, I'd much rather have a little bit more healthy of a estuary system than worrying about having packs of 30 or 40 tarpon cruising down a ditch. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was, go ahead.
I was just going to say, to kind of piggyback on what you were saying about or the way you describe the mullet run and your techniques and stuff, the only thing I have for you guys on conventional gear when it comes to the mullet run is in the intercoastal, I've got two baits. If it's not a live bait, so two artificial baits. Style, hard bait. I personally like the K4s, which are handcrafted wood plugs. They catch fish. They work really well. I've always, if given the opportunity to fish a plastic plug versus a wooden plug, I'll grab a wood plug 9 times out of 10, just because I there's something about it. I don't know. I think when the fish hit it, and they miss it, or they get it and they don't get the hook, they want to come back and smack it again. I think it has just enough give to where it kind of feels somewhat lifelike. Like the, what was it? The Rapala Twitch and Wrap. Was it the Twitch and Wrap that's made of balsa? One of them. One of their baits. Yeah.
Just old school chop.
I'd have
face it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd have trout just smack them things over and over and over again and come back, and then you can see, like, the fang impressions and the teeth impressions from a good-sized trout in the wood itself. And then the other one, obviously, Slayer Ink, anything. But the SST XL in molting color and the SST Standard in molting color will always be my go-to colors, personally, just because I have a lot of confidence in them. But... you know, Bounty Hunter and the Silver Mullet and
Venice Glow.
Venice Glow, thank you. All of those colors are just great fish catching colors. And, you know, you want to kind of try and match the hatch as much as possible. And like Alex said, if you're fishing in and around areas where your mullet are 2 to 3 inches or 4 to 5 inches, try and match that same size ish. And, never, ever, ever leave a wad of mullet to go try and find or to go try to sight fish. Like, I've learned that lesson way long ago when I was in high school, way in the flats. If you find a big wad of row mullet or a big wad of finger mullet, just as Alex said, just kind of shadow them and follow them, because those predatory fish are going to take advantage of any opportunity they get to feed. And if the mullet are coming through in waves and they're not coming through in a consistent, you know, march down a flat, it would behoove you to follow that pack of mullet around and just line cast into that school of fish. And, you know, you'll pull redfish and snook and everything out of them. You don't necessarily have to fish the mangroves this time of year to find snook, because they will hang out outside the mangrove line, especially in the mullet are marching down the flat. But over on the fly side of things, this is an exciting time of year, or we're getting ready to get into an exciting time of year for those of you who have never thrown a fly into the surf. During the mullet run, when the finger mullet are getting pressed against the beach by jacks and Spanish and ladyfish and sharks and everything else, it is a fun time to just take a, you know, I would say a heavy 9 weight, light 10 weight ish kind of a rod, and walk the beach and just sling big clousers or any kind of bait fish patterns really into the surf. And you never know what you're going to hook. For one cast, you can catch a decent sized ladyfish, or maybe a decent blue or big jack. And the next cast could be an 80 pound tarpon. And so, it's just exciting. It's fun. It's a great way to practice too, because you don't have to necessarily worry so much about the way the line lays in the water or any of those types of things that you normally would on the flats. You get a surface slap or whatever. But if you can punch cast into an onshore breeze and kind of get used to doing that, then when you're fishing behind an island somewhere, you're fishing on a protected shoreline somewhere, your casting is going to just be that much better, because you're so, you know, you're accustomed to having to throw into wind. So it definitely makes a bit of a difference. And I personally don't mind throwing a floating. Go ahead.
As I say, an intermediate line helps with everything about that. Throwing into the wind.
Yeah.
Getting your line below the surf, keeping contact with your fly. It really helps.
Yeah, I was going to say, on a slick calm day, I don't typically mind throwing even a floating line on a slick calm day, which we get some of those sometimes this time of year. But when you do have a little bit of texture to it, for sure, an intermediate line is super nice because it gets you down below and does keep you well in contact with your fly, because that is a problem with anything other than that intermediate line, keeping your fly in, or keeping you in contact with it, so you know when you get that strike, because otherwise, you know, fish could be doing circles around your fly and eat, and have eaten it, and you might not even feel it with a floating line. But, you know, it's very simplistic. I mean, anything that looks bait fishy, thrown in and around bait fish, if there's predators there, they're going to eat it. Jumping into the tarpon thing real quick, I love catching tarpon on fly rods, and I think that they tend to become a little bit even more aggressive this time of year than maybe even in the fall or in early spring when they start to show up, which is fun because then they get stupid. When tarpon get super aggressive, they get dumb, and they'll literally take a swipe at just about anything you put in front of them. They might not eat it. They'll come up and inspect it and do the big roll and the whole thing. But there are times where you find them when they're lit up and they're just, they'll fire on anything. And a decently casted fly in a general, you know, area in which you see tarpon rolling will almost always result at some point in a strike. And, you know, I will say this, we are in the summertime. Today's heat index is like 105. I wouldn't go out throwing a 5 or 6 weight this time of year for tarpon, just because I don't want to kill the damn things. Same thing with redfish. Bump it up to like an 8 weight at least. This way here you can put some serious pressure on the fish and try and whoop them, and you know, not wear them out to the point of complete and utter exhaustion. We don't have the problems with the sharks typically inshore like they do in other places, so that's not really the point of having to bump up the size of your rod. It's more or less just trying to whoop fish in that hot water so that you don't cause it any more undue stress than we already do to them. So there's that. That's all I got, man. That's my see, that's the difference. You just like filled everybody's mind with all this excellent information, and I come in behind you like, I got, like, this is what I got. here you go. Here's a little tidbit. You know, here, go eat. Go see if that works for you. Telling you, man. And you're on your downtime, you need to write books.
Knowledge.
But
there's another thing. There's another thing Captain Alex taught me about mullet, schools of mullet, that we didn't talk about. He talked about the fish attacking the mullet. Last time I fished with Alex, he said, "You see those mullet over there? There was 3 or 4 mullet." He said, "There's a redfish under there." And I was like, and it was shallow too. I was like, I don't see a redfish. I made a bad cast. Poop! Little redfish snuck out from under the mullet. I guess he was trailing and looking for something to eat. I'm like, how do you know that, Alex?
Yeah. That's what
but
they
he
do.
He was up under there just like Alex said. Alex called it. Set up there.
That's what
I guess,
they do.
You know, mullet pushing stuff, and they're looking for scraps.
When we had really nice grass, when we had really nice grass in the river, there was a spot that I would go to on my way to work when I worked at Hamlet Fish and Supply in Port Canaveral, and I took the kayak in the back of the truck. I could drop it in the water after dropping the kids off, and I knew that I had, you know, say 45 minutes to fish. Well, when the mullet are moving down that particular flat and you can see row mullet from 528, I'll just say it's 528. When you can see mullet from the bridge, like on the surface, looking a little nervous, but not like completely freaking out, you know for a fact there's something in them. Like, mullet will tell you, they'll let you know, all right, well, we don't really feel super comfortable right now, but I guess it's going to be okay because he hasn't eaten any of us yet. And redfish especially will follow those schools of mullet like puppy dogs, and especially the row mullet. I mean, a 25-inch redfish may take a swipe at a foot-long mullet. I don't think he's going to get it down his gullet. but he may think about it. But then again, a 25-inch redfish could slide in behind a whole big school of roe mullet when there's grass around, and those mullet are down there feeding on that algae that's on the grass, and the mullet are spooking shrimp and small crabs and all kinds of things up out of that grass. And, yeah, it's just easy pickings. It's easy pickings. So, yeah, for sure. That's a good point. Good point.
Alex taught me that.
Yeah.
Knowledge.
Alex has taught me a lot. You've taught me a lot. I mean, everybody I get a chance to fish with, I try to get something from just about everybody I fish with as far as something, maybe a new technique or a new way to look at things or whatever like that. But that's the one thing that's always been consistent with fishing with you, Alex, is that I always come away feeling like, huh, I'm learning something new today. I like that, you know, so good stuff. Speaking of learning something new. Okay, so I'm going to take a second, because I just feel like it, to tell you guys a little something about this Rightwater 12 situation. I really want to get you back into that boat, Alex, now that we've deck on it. It's a lot of fun, folks. It's the boat came out of the desire to be able to launch a small skiff virtually anywhere we wanted to. Sounds familiar, right? That's why most of us got into kayak fishing. And it will fit between the wheel wells of a full-size pickup truck very easily. Two people can lift this boat out of the back of a truck and set it down and slide it into the water, no problem. But, you know, to see this thing come together and to you know, be a part of it has been honestly the most exciting thing that I've been a part of in the world of fishing in a long, long time. I kind of lost my passion for fishing a little bit for a while there because of the things that our estuaries are going through and just having somewhat burnout on it a little bit too, because I just kind of got bored and whatever. It has not only brought my passion back to full sail, but it's actually got me kind of a little bit more amped than that. And I like to equate it to the first time I got in a kayak and paddled a kayak around and caught fish out of a kayak. The feeling I got then is the feeling I have now about this thing. And, you know, I hope you guys are following along. If you guys ever have any questions about it or whatever, I've been inundated the last, like, about a week and a half about questions about the boat, horsepower rating, and all this kind of stuff. But, yeah, I just appreciate the kind remarks and the well wishes and stuff that I've received from folks who've been following along with the project. And it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll have the demo done.
It's a cool little boat.
Thanks. We should have the demo done by Friday, all intents and purposes. We're just waiting on a motor, and I'm gonna put a 15. I know I spoke about the boat once before in the show, and I said I wanted to go a 9.9, but I'm just gonna put a 15 on it. Virtually the same thing. As far as weight's concerned, there's not a whole lot of difference there. With two grown anglers in it, it'll run mid 20s with a 15 on it. So I'm pretty happy with that. I don't think it needs to go any faster than that.
No.
We've changed a few things. We've made a few adjustments here and there that we didn't really talk about, and another reason why it's taken us a little bit longer to put the finished product out there. We really wanted to kind of dial it in as much as we possibly could before, like, the big release, which will be coming here very soon. I've got a seminar, coincidentally, the same day that Alex is doing his at Boaters Exchange. I've got one up at Flagler County Sport Fishing Club. So if anybody wants to take a peek at the Rightwater 12, the demo boat, it will be with me up there at Flagler County Sport Fishing Club. So hopefully those guys will like it. My plan is to carry it inside and set it down on the stage. So not by myself. I'm going to have somebody help me, but yeah, that should turn some heads, I would think. But yeah, it's been a fun project. I think that's pretty much all I got tonight. I just wanted to talk about the mullet run. I wanted to go on a rant for a few minutes because it's been a while, and I wanted to throw that out there about the Rightwater 12. We're going fishing.
Yes,
James
we
and I.
Are.
We're gonna go
we're going to the place Alex said he couldn't go to.
I don't remember Alex ever saying he couldn't go.
Oh, I talked to him about it one time. He said he couldn't go there because he afraid he wouldn't come back.
Oh, yes. We're going to Louisiana.
Oh, last time out.
We're going to go to Louisiana. We're going to see if we can't find a dumb red fisher or a few to throw some flies at. Pretty excited about that. We will not be kayak fishing, but we will be talking about the trip when we get back. That's for sure.
We
Alex,
will be eating.
You got anything else?
Copious amounts of good food.
Yeah, I like. I've already tried to make kind of a plan as to a few things I'd like to try and eat while I'm there. We only have a day, so it's actually probably one of the coolest trips that I think I will ever have taken for sure. Being that it's kind of like fly in, jump on a boat, fish, then do whatever, wake up the next morning, fish, then jump on a plane and come home. So that's pretty awesome. Looking forward to it for sure. It's always a good time hanging out with you, my friend.
It shall be wonderful.
Yeah. Alex, you got anything else to add, buddy?
Nah, man, just sitting here trying to put new live well pumps together.
Sweet.
Right. Such is life, man. Never ends.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
I like the mullet jacuzzi. What is the mullet jacuzzi?
Well, that's the bubbler that I have at the house. That's the house bubbler. But I actually just invested in 12 volt air pump, like a power bubbler is what it's called. It puts out a pretty good roll of bubbles. And I'm fitting it with a nice little 12 volt battery and a dry box so that I have a capable and long lasting option for my bait.
It's pretty awesome, dude. Always doing the always going the extra mile for the client. That's why you're the one of the best at it, man.
Yeah, happy baits make for happy fish, make for happy clients. So we tend to go that route.
And if someone wants to get a hold of you, man, for a charter, how do they do it, of course?
Just give me a shout at 321-480-3255 or hit me up at locallinescharters.com.
There you go. Yeah. Folks, and if you just jumped into the show recently and you didn't get a chance to hear Captain Alex's dissertation on the mullet run, I highly recommend that you download this podcast and listen to it again at work or mowing the lawn or whatever. Take notes. There's a lot of good information there. And I appreciate you always being involved with the show and everything else you do, buddy. You're a good person.
Well, thank you, buddy.
Buddy.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah.
Buddy. All right, buddy.
All right, buddy.
Good name,
and so, James, what all you've taken with you? You said you got 2 9-weights. Are you taking 2 9-weights or what's your plan?
Two nines and a 10. Remember the guy we're fishing with on Saturday said bring a 10?
Yeah.
And then 2 9s. Since you don't have a 9, I was going to bring 2 9s.
Okay.
That's about it. I thought about bringing like a 7 or 8, but both guys were fishing with like 9 weight. So
yeah.
Same thing. They don't want to stress the fish out. They want to get them in quick.
Yeah. I'll bring a 10 as well just to have it.
Yeah, bring your 10.
I guess that's really all. I guess I'll just bring a 10
and
a bunch of flies.
Yep.
Should be
Make
good.
Sure you bring some flies that I can steal.
Oh, I'll
when
have,
you're not looking
I'll
when you're up on the deck casting. Yeah, when you're on the deck
I'll,
casting,
I'll,
I'm going to pull for your fly box.
Well, somebody decided to help themselves to my to both of my dry bags, my big yellow dry bag and my brand new dry bag backpack that I just purchased. So that sucks. Apparently, I left the truck door unlocked in my truck in my driveway or something at some point, and they're gone. Luckily enough for me, there was nothing in either one of them. So they were both empty. I just emptied them like probably a week or two prior to them being stolen from my truck. But yeah, I've got one, two, three. I've got four. See, the only thing that sucks is I've got like four fly boxes right now slapped full of redfish and black drum flies, but they're all like, you know, Florida type stuff, all tans and brown, tan.
You gotta have
so,
well, browns are good over there. And
yeah,
it has
but
some
I'm gonna
try purple and chartreuse.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm gonna kind of focus heavy on that. I spoke to a few different people that kind of gave me the inside Iggy as to what works real well over there. So looking forward to it. Appreciate it as always. It's gonna be a fun adventure. And then what else? Is there something else? Anything else? I can't think of anything else right now. Oh, big shout out to RCI Optics, Troy and Tony. Again this year, putting on the Invitational tournament. Really looking forward to it. They've been updating everybody with what's going on with the raffles and all this kind of stuff. And they put on an amazing show last year with the tournament, and looking forward to fishing it again with Alex. And hopefully this year we can find that snook and take home top prize. That would be great. Because we were literally a snook out of wind in that thing. So we'll have a good time either way, but I would like to win. It would be fun. So thank you guys, though. Thank you so much to RCI Optics for putting on the event. They do that out of their own budget, so just their way of giving back and saying thanks to those who support them, which is really cool. It's nice to be a part of a company like that. And, yeah, there you go. That's it. All right, guys, appreciate it. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns about the show, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, feel free to get a hold of either myself or Captain Alex and let us know. If you have questions, feel free to ask either on our Facebook page or on our personal pages. And again, if you want to go on a charter with Captain Alex, you can get a hold of him at 321-480-3255 or localalliancecharters.com. And we will talk to you next week. And here's my button. Good night.